time for the ladies to be heard. Welcome to Muscle Girls, Inc., presented by RxMuscle.com. You are about to hear two of the smartest and sexiest IFBB pros tell it like it is. Here are your hosts, Colette Nelson and Chrissy Chin.
Welcome to the fourth episode of Muscle Girls, Inc. My name is Colette Nelson, IFBB professional bodybuilder, and I'm joined by my sexy co-host, IFBB pro figure competitor, Chrissy Chin.
Hey, Colette. How are you doing out there?
Doing good over here in New York. How about you in Cali?
Doing good. A little rainy out today, but otherwise awesome.
Awesome. Well, Chrissy, I want to thank first our top sponsor of Muscle Girls, Inc., ALRI Industries. We cannot say enough because they believe in what we're doing, and we believe in their commitment to excellence with their supplements, that's for sure. And on that note, I have to say that Lena and Arthur sent Dave and I chained out last week. And I always love this when I get little packages. And, you know, all bodybuilders love packages that include supplements, right or wrong, Chrissy.
Did they send both flavors? Did
yes.
you get both flavors, berry banana and apple teeny?
I love them. The apple teeny is great.
I know. We're trying to decide which is our favorite flavor. What is your favorite so
I
far?
Like the apple teeny. That's good.
That's my favorite.
I love the way it tastes, and, you know, I'm a person that likes to do the empty, well, you know, I'm kind of dieting, and I like to do the cardio on an empty stomach, but it actually just kind of makes me feel like, first off, it just gives me that safety assurance that I've got some amino acids in me. I love the way it tastes, and it just kind of helps me get through the whole workout. I take it, like, before cardio, before I work out, after I work out. I love it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It tastes awesome. Like I said, apple teeny is my favorite flavor. I actually sip it during my workouts. I take it on empty stomach when I do my cardio before I eat my first meal. And I'm also taking between my meals. And actually, you know, I'm still being able to put on little lean muscle tissue, even though I started prep and stuff. So it's a great product. It's chained out. And the good news is, especially for Mr. John Romano, who we dearly love, that Porn Star, which is another new product release, is getting closer to being on the market soon. So
I love the
John
name.
John is almost here.
Porn Star.
Porn Star. Porn Star. You will get your free bottle. Don't worry.
That's awesome. Well, this is a very special episode of Muscle Girls, Inc. You know, we're talking about an issue that is very dear and near to my heart, and I think also yours too, Chrissy. And I think it affects, you know, women and even some men in our industry and even the general public. I mean, no one's really immune. And we're talking about eating disorders.
Yeah, it's a very sensitive issue, like you said, but I think it's a very important one that we should discuss because I think a lot more people are afflicted with it than maybe aware of it or want to openly admit to it. So I'm glad that we did decide to address this issue today.
You know, one can argue that competing, you know, especially competing because it requires this 12 to 16 week dedication to maniacal dieting, I like to call it. Otherwise, you just don't get the results. I mean, you know, you got to be strict. Could possibly exacerbate an eating disorder or, you know, at the same time, people say that it actually helps them, those that are anorexic, to eat. I mean, I guess it's just you look at it like this. If you can basically be in control of that under eating and overeating or on or off season, then it's okay. But I think when it gets out of control and you get these bizarre types of behavior, you know, you can wrap it up in however package you want to slice and dice it, because, you know, an eating disorder can present itself in so many different ways. Binge eating, orthorexia, which is a fixation on eating too clean, you know, exercise, over-exercising, even something called sham eating, where basically you're chewing your food and you're spitting it out. I mean, it really can disguise itself. And it's just an interesting note that we're going to look at today, whether competition hinders or helps an eating disorder.
Yeah, and I think what's great is that, you know, some of the women that we have on today's show have been able to use bodybuilding and the sport to help them actually overcome their eating disorders. And namely, Miss Christy Hawkins, Emery Miller, and also Miss Sandy Rinaldi Williamson.
Wow, that's exciting. We're going to have a good show today. You know, let's talk about something, Christy. I mean, because I don't want to sit here and say that as a host, I am not immune from this, because I am not. You know, I think that, you know, whenever you finish a competition, so it's been 12 to 16 weeks, and, you know, we've been dieting and we've been depriving ourselves of food, you know, you feel this sense of, like, urgency to eat. I mean, you and I both work with competitors. I mean, you start writing a list down of everything you're going to eat after the show. And it starts to become crazy. And you know, you find yourself craving things you never used to crave or even want to eat prior to ever stepping on a stage or doing this whole 12 to 16 week competition. And I think what I'm really most concerned about is when this spills over into days or weeks after the show, and then you mm-hmm. start to feel depressed, and you feel that you gain weight and you're bloated, and you chase what we call that competition type of body, and then you just totally lose sense of what and how to eat.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, like you said, as hosts, we're not immune to it. I know I have some personal stories that I can share with our listeners today, and one in particular, I remember even last year after my first show of the year, which was the Houston Pro Show last year, I had planned what I was going to eat, and I was like, no matter how full I am, I know I'm going to eat this stuff.
Right.
So we went to the Cheesecake Factory, and I was like, okay, ready for my list, Clint?
All right.
I had...
Don't hold back.
I'm not going to hold back. I am going to openly share everything that I ingested. That's it. So we sat there, and I ordered, and then Troy looks at me. He's like, I can't believe you just ordered all that. And I'm like, and I'm going to eat all of it. So I had two chocolate Godiva martinis, a glass of wine, fried calamari, burger, fries, and, of course, I had to have Godiva chocolate cheesecake. And, I mean, this was all in one sitting, Clint.
Oh,
and I was...
That's a lot, yeah.
We made it back to the hotel, and I just remember laying on that bed, and I was like, all right, my belly and abdomen distended about 1 foot forward, and I cannot move. I was just laying on that bed. I literally could not move, and I was like, do not touch me. No one bother me. I can't move. And I just felt disgusting.
Yeah, it's like, why did we do that? I mean, there's no reason, I don't care how hungry you are, that you should be able to eat, you know, did you be eating like that? And it's, and that's what bothers me. I mean, I know I can share stories with you. I mean, this, my very first competition, big mistake. And this is just, I wish I was lying. We went to an all-you-can-eat sushi bar, and I am telling you, you know, those that don't know about sushi, but a roll has about six pieces. Well, I ate 100 pieces of sushi. 100.
100? Wait, 100?
Little pieces. So that was like, I don't even know. It was like 12 rolls or something. That's seven. No, it was more than that. It was 100 little pieces of sushi. Uh-huh. I mean, the next day, I couldn't even open my eyes. And I mean, for those of you that don't know me about me, but I am a type 1 diabetic, so this is horrible that I'm even saying this, but I had to take about 100 units of insulin, of Humalog insulin, in order to keep my blood sugar stable. So it was even really detrimental. I mean, it was really, really a stupid thing to do. And I was like, oh my God, I can never do this again just because it's totally unhealthy. And I mean, it was just, it's downright dangerous. And, you know, we will talk about that and some of the issues because, in fact, I was helping another competitor for the Nationals, and she was a lightweight, and she had, you know, dieted down to 114. She's only 5'2", and she was going on a cruise that next week. And I was like, you know, this is not a good idea. She already has a binge eating issue, and I've been working through it with her while she was getting ready for a show. And what basically happened was 10 days on this cruise, she came back from the cruise. Remember, weighed in at 114. Came back 160 pounds in 10 days.
How long was she on that cruise?
I know. 10 days. 10 days. I mean,
wow.
You know, like I said, this is so dangerous because it actually can lead to congestive heart failure because you get fluid overload. And I mean, we as, you know, competitors have to be more conscious of what we do that night after a show and get our heads in the right place because, you know, we feel like we're so deserving of all this food, but... I mean, quite honestly, it's like the human body just is not ready to take in that many calories at one sitting for any reason whatsoever.
I cannot believe she gained that on that one cruise.
That's insane. It was the most amount of weight I'd ever even, you know, heard in such a short period of time. I've heard some crazy stuff.
Well, what do you think, Claude? Even before you started competing, do you ever remember having, you know, similar type issues with eating or anything that you can remember?
You know, I have to be totally honest with you, Christy. You know, remember, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 12, so I was never eating anything bad. I mean, I was just under the idea, okay, I'm going to test my blood sugar, take a right amount of insulin, and never eat. And you learned, as diabetics now should know and learn, you basically can eat anything you want. You just have to give the right amount of insulin. So as I became more educated and learned how to keep my blood sugars under control, then it opened up the areas of foods that I could eat or never had eaten. So I still kept things under control, and I, you know, realized that, oh, wow, all these years of restriction, I could now be eating certain things, just had to learn how to take the right amount of insulin. But it became even worse when I started competing. For me, it definitely got worse because I never in my life would have even eaten donuts or things like that. And I remember after my first competition, I was just eating things I never would have normally eaten. And I was like, what am I doing? This is not part of who I am. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was entitled to eat these things. What about you on that note?
I remember, like I said, before I started competing, I think it was probably, you know, when I look back at it now, at the time, of course, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't think I had an eating issue or, you know, I thought I was totally perfect normal, doing the right thing. And it was probably right after my mom had passed of cancer. You know, it was a really tough time, and my dad just was in a bad rut and, you know, just trying to pull him out, and I was trying to be the strong one, and, you know, I just felt so helpless at times, and, you know, I didn't openly grieve, so I had to be the strong one, you know. So I remember I used to do, you know, I was like, well, if I can't control that, then I'm going to control what I'm putting in my mouth. So I literally remember counting my calories, making sure I don't go over a certain gram of fat. I was weighing myself constantly. I was doing hours and hours of cardio, probably like 3 hours a day, training with weights about an hour and a half a day. And I mean, so I was in the gym probably 4.5 hours a day, you know, not thinking anything of it. And I remember even my brother saying, wow, I think, you know, you have an eating disorder or something. And when I looked at myself, I didn't think that. But now when I look back at pictures at, you know, 5'4", I was weighing about 100 pounds. I'm like, wow, I think, you know, at the time I really was.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't realize it until now. I really look back and think about it. I'm like, I obviously did, you know.
You know, before I started, you know, competing, I actually was at a gym where I'm from Michigan. I used to train at this gym, and this ex-competitor turned therapist. She looked at me. She's like, are you competitive? Do you compete? And I said, no, I actually hadn't started competing yet, because I started training at 19, but I really didn't start competing until I was like 24, 25. Mm-hmm. She's like, take my card. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what are you talking? She goes, because when you start competing, you could suffer from one of these, like, not even clinically diagnosed type of eating disorders. And she started going into her issues where, you know, that feeling of being deprived for so long leads to just, you know, this type of out of control eating. And I never knew what she was talking about. I kind of rolled my eyes at her, took the card. And years later, in retrospect, when I think about what happened to me that night when I ate those 100 pieces of sushi or did stupid things like eating 5 protein bars with peanut butter smeared all over them, by the way, which is fabulous. But I mean, you know, I've done really some really stupid things. I'm like, you know what? I really remember that. Her telling me, you know what? That, you know, something happens sometimes to some people that have that tendency, and that's definitely me, you know, that definitely happened to me.
You know, I think other competitors, you know, they start blaming competition because they feel that, you know, for competition they need to take antihistamines and compete, you know, and that they're entitled to do something out of control after they finish competing, and then they have this influx of, you know, estrogen that causes some type of, you know, all the hormonal disturbances going on, and the feeling of being deprived for, you know, you said weeks at a time. You know, often this can lead to, you know, binge eating.
I mean, you have to wonder if there is some type of relevance. I mean, and when you start going into, I know you're going to talk about in a little bit about causes, they do say estrogen issues. So when you're messing around with stuff like that, it has to have some type of, I mean, I know, you know, as a woman gets close to their menstrual cycle, I mean, let's face it, sometimes your cravings kind of get out of control. You just want that salt and sweet. So our industry is filled with these, you know, people that are overcompensating and dealing with their self-esteem issues. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to talk to our guests to see how they feel about whether or not the industry in itself has helped them or hindered them in their eating disorder.
Oh, I agree with you. And, you know, I've witnessed some of these behaviors within our industry, you know, from seeing other people. And so I think it's really important that, you know, you need to start recognizing what a sign, you know, or signs of an eating disorder might be, you know. And often it's, you know, when you're so preoccupied with the way you look, you know, the way your body is, you know, your weight, you know. And it's when I look at a lot of these signs of eating disorder, it's ironic because so many of these signs are the characteristics of someone that's on a contest prep diet.
All right, well,
so
read
I found that very interesting. So I wanted to share that with our listeners. So signs of an eating disorder: obsession with calories, food, or nutrition. Someone that weighs himself or herself repeatedly. I know I find myself bouncing on and off that scale quite often.
I know. The first two already look like people
constant dieting even when you're thin. Rapid unexplained weight loss or weight gain. Like, look at the cruise story that you just shared.
Yep.
Taking laxative or diet pills as a means to purge. Compulsive exercising. Well, that's another one that I shared with you, my 4.5 hours, 5 hours in the gym. Avoiding social situations that involve food.
Chrissy, this one I know more than you know. I have several friends. I'm like, well, you want to go out tonight? They're like, no, I can't. I ate something. I'm telling you, they tell me straight up. I ate something really bad. I can't do it. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, they can't. I mean, this is debilitating.
That's why I think it's important that, you know, we are sharing with our listeners that, you know, you may be experiencing, you know, signs of an eating disorder. So another one is going to the bathroom right after your meals to purge, which I've seen, you know, women do. As soon as they're done eating, they excuse themselves and they're gone for a little bit. And you're wondering, it's funny that it always happens right after they finish eating.
Yeah.
You know, eating alone at night or even, you know, hiding from people when you're eating. So hiding in secret.
Oh, my God. I've done that. Ask Dave about the peanut butter. It's terrible. But I mean, I know it's bad. Chrissy, I know it's bad. I'll bring the jar upstairs and I'll put it in my jar. I mean, it's bad. And I want to, you know, I got to keep check with myself, like checking in with myself. This isn't the right behavior. You know, it's not healthy to do this, you know?
Well, I didn't hear you tippy-toeing when I stayed at the house.
I was actually being good. Oh, God.
Also, hoarding high-calorie food. And then only eating certain foods and avoiding foods like dairy or meat or even wheat products. But, of course, you know, a lot of people may be allergic to certain type of food or are vegetarians. So
that's understandable.
Another big sign, they feel like they're fat. And how many times have someone said to you, wow, I'm fat?
Yep.
I know I've heard it quite often.
Yep.
Also, withdrawing from social activities, which you just talked about, you know, about going out to dinner and then they can't for some reason. Also, when someone has, you know, they're depressed, you know, or lethargic, or, you know, they have no energy to do anything. And also, the fear of being fat. You know, how many women have told you, Colette, you know, I just don't want to get fat, I just don't want to be fat.
You know, it goes back to this whole body image thing. You know, we gotta learn to love our bodies in shape, out of shape, in between shape, and just start with that first sense of having a better self-image, and then the food can kind of flow with it. You know, you don't start to abuse yourself with the food, because it is serious. I mean, the commissioner of the health services, basically, untreated eating disorders, you know, can cause heart and kidney failure, gastric esophageal ulcers, obviously from if you're purging, pancreatitis, that's issues with your digestive enzymes, type 2 diabetes, that is if you're overweight and binge eating, gallbladder disease and osteoporosis, because you might be, you know, depriving yourself of calcium. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his thought, this is what the commissioner on eating disorder says, that anyone that is suffering from an eating disorder, you know, as people in their lives or their family, it's about encouraging treatment. It's not about self-blame, you know, because the longer an eating disorder goes undiagnosed or untreated, really the harder it is for the body to recover. I mean, the farther down you go in terms of weight, you know, anorexia can obviously be the most, I think, lethal of all of them. But I mean, again, binge eating actually, we'll go into that in our Did You Knows, but binge eating is very prevalent, more so than even people really want to talk about.
Yeah, and I think people need to be aware that, you know, these are serious health complications. And, you know, at the time they're doing it, they're not thinking about what possibly can harm their heart, their kidneys, you know, their pancreas. So I think people really need to evaluate, you know, if they possibly have any disorder, and that these are serious, serious health complications that may occur if they do have one.
Yep.
And we should also, you know, also along those lines, we should discuss, you know, possible causes. Like, what causes these eating disorders, Colette? Obviously something that's triggering them.
Right. So what do you think? I mean, there's a list we can go on, but I mean, I think what becomes just apparent in the literature, I guess, is like the obsessive compulsive behaviors, estrogen dominance. This is like in, you know, types of literature too. Depression, elevated insulin, but there's a lot more. I mean, Chrissy.
Yeah, issues of self-esteem, you know, maybe feeling of being just inadequate, or if someone's maybe perfectionist or like type A personality to the extreme, or maybe even dealing with a personal loss, which I think, you know, was a big part in mine, you know, whether it's from a death of a family member or a breakup with a relationship, you know, but some type of personal loss.
But I think you're right. There's something that kind of, like, you know, triggers it, or it's this deep sense of, you know, either lack of self-worth or whatever. Something inside of you just kind of switches off and you start to just take it out on food, you know? So it's interesting. What about, like,
drugs and stuff. I was just thinking about that, but I was, you know, we researched a little bit, and, you know, currently there are no drugs that will treat or, you know, cure these eating disorders, you know, so we've got to figure out what is actually going to help. I mean, they've tried, you know, Meridia, you know, they've tried anxiety drugs, serotonin, GABA have also been recommended by some physicians, but do they actually work? You know, there's just underlying reasons why people are using food as a drug.
Or as like a form of control, you know, so you got the people using, binge eaters using it as a drug, and the people that are anorexic are using it for control. I mean, you know, what kind of, there's no drug out there to really say, okay, that's going to switch that little mechanism off in the brain. I got to tell you a crazy story. I mean, okay, you're looking at binge eaters, okay, and I deal with it. I can't even tell you how many people it's almost really crazy how many people I deal with that talk to me about it. There was a doctor, and I'm not making this up because this was my client. So this might sound crazy, and I don't know the doctor's name, and I wouldn't really want to expose that on the air, but he is practicing in Brooklyn currently as we speak. And a client of mine that I was training, this is about 3 years ago, came in, and she was talking like this with her teeth. I was like, why are you talking like this? She said, well, Colette, you're going to think I'm crazy. But you sign up for this weight loss program with this doctor, and he wires your jaw shut. She could not open her mouth. And she had to sip through a straw so she would drink. Yep.
So they can physically eat food then?
Yep. So you pay him 3 months. You pay like $1,500, I believe, for the three-month program. Okay. And you were guaranteed to lose weight because, Chrissy, your mouth is wired shut. Hello, right?
Yeah. Oh, my.
And in order to take it, so you sign this whole waiver thing, whatever, and you're drinking these shakes or whatever. It's quite a racket there. And then I remember one time she had to get it unwired, he charges you $75 so that you don't want to get it unwired. So you're stuck giving him the money to wire your mouth shut, you know, the guarantee that you're going to lose weight because your mouth is wired. And then in order to just unwire it, you're paying $75. So what a racket that is. I mean,
and this guy is still in practice.
Yes.
And this guy is wiring people's mouths shut, and they're letting him wire their mouth shut.
That's what I'm telling you. These people are people are desperate to lose weight. And I sat there saying, I'm like, you know what? This is not going to change the reasons why you're eating. Because once this wires come off your mouth, what is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was my only issue with that. And then, I mean, you're looking with, even with somebody with anorexia, I mean, you can give them total parenteral nutrition. But for how long, Chrissy? I mean, if they don't learn how to eat the food, then they're still back into where we're at. So, I mean, we know that psychotherapy is probably one of the most beneficial ways. And like we were talking about, as a dietitian, I mean, I worked in an HIV hospital, and we talked about this with other dietitians. We thought, you know what? It is easier to get somebody off of heroin than it is to get them to stop binge eating. And I was like, what? And that concept to me was like, what do you mean? And we talked about this. They're like, you know why, Colette? Because heroin, people can live without. Mm-hmm. Your body does not need heroin to live. You need food to live. And to teach people how to deal with food in their daily lives is much, much harder than it is to get somebody off of heroin. And it really stuck with me. That's how difficult it is, you know, to deal with eating disorders.
Wow, that's something. You know, we've covered so much already.
I know.
You know, we also found a whole bunch of interesting stats and stuff that, you know, we definitely wanted to share. So we'll share that in our Did You Knows.
Yeah, Did You Knows actually have a relevance. Let's fire them up, Chrissy.
Okay. Well, at a 1997 congressional briefing on eating disorder, a lady by the name of Lisa Berzins, who has a PhD, said that young girls have indicated in surveys that they are more afraid of becoming fat than they are of cancer, nuclear war, or even losing their parents. Being fat, it's clear, it's a very frightening prospect for young girls, so it's no wonder that dieting and eating disorders take such a prominent place statistically.
Wow, that's a good one. Well, anorexia has one of the highest mortality rates of any psychiatric disorder and tends to start early in life. Now, that's scary.
Yeah, that is scary. And then, you know, people are like, oh, you know, they hear about anorexia, bulimia. Which one is more common? So, though more common than anorexia, those with bulimia are very unlikely to pursue treatment. And we talked about all the health issues that can possibly, you know, become if you have such eating disorders.
Binge eating disorder, though not yet an official diagnosis on its own, is more common than anorexia and bulimia combined. So they need to look at that as an issue.
And then it goes into estimates of the number of women in the United States who have eating disorders range from 7 to 10 million. Now, Colette,
that's a lot.
Think about that number. Just within the U.S.
Right.
And
I know.
You know? And it is thought that 1 million men Now, not just, you know, so it's not just women suffering, it's men also, that 1 million men also suffer from eating disorders. So it's 40% of Americans have experienced an eating disorder or know someone who has.
40%, that's
40%.
I know, it's almost 50% of the population, so think about that. So, you know, the relevance of this show really is going to hit a lot of people. It really is. You know, female athletes, as we're going to talk about, as we've been talking about, are more susceptible to eating disorders than the general population. It estimates that the eating disorder prevalence in female athletes is between 15 to 62%, which I really agree with. I think, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more on the higher end than the lower end.
Me too, definitely.
And then this stat will blow, this will blow your mind when I saw this, okay? You ready?
Mm-hmm.
4 out of every 5 women, okay? That's 80% of women in the United States are dissatisfied with their appearance.
That's why the weight loss industry is a $1 billion industry. They're preying on this, you know, this desire to look a certain way, you know? And it gets, you know, It's a situation. It definitely is a situation. And finally, according to the first nationally representative study of eating disorders in the U.S., which appeared in February 2007, so this is really current, 1.5% of women and 0.5% of men reported suffering from bulimia in their lifetime. The illness lasted for 8 years. Because the question is, when does it ever end? I think it's like any drug. If you're an alcoholic, Chrissy, are you, once you stop drinking, are you not an alcoholic anymore? No, you're still an alcoholic. I mean, you're always an alcoholic. Drinking is something that is going to be a problem in your life, you know? So it's like, it's kind of like something that you have to think about every day of your life, or I think it could easily haunt you and come back.
And that's a long time. Like you said, 8 years, that is a long time. So think about the damage that can, you know, take place in the human body over 8 years of having some type of disorder like bulimia.
Well, you know, we're going to get into our guests, but before I do that, and I hope, I really do hope we didn't, you know, I was worried about this becoming so statistical, and I didn't want anything to sound like we're, you know, just, you know, being boring at all and talking about this stuff. I really want this to inspire, because I think that the information out there is good, and I think it's great to hear that, you know what, we're right there with you, to all of our listeners, that we're right there with you. We've been there. I've been there in the darkest of days in that closet eating protein bars, hiding from the world, you know? So it's, you know, you're not alone on so many levels with this. And being that we're not alone, I'm just going to share with you some very open people that we've both found and searched and researched when we were looking for our guests that talk about an eating disorder. And these are in our industry. Nicole Ball, a very impressive Canadian IFBB professional bodybuilder, had struggled with an eating disorder in the beginning part of her life and is in, and has used competition to help overcome that. So she's another one.
Yeah, and another one is Ms. Brianna Tindell, who is an IFBB pro figure athlete. You know, she openly admits about, you know, falling into depression, how it affected her grades in school, and she had developed both an under and over eating disorder. So, you know, it wasn't just one, it was both types. You know, so she was able to turn it around, and now, you know, she's a beautiful woman that competes on the IFBB stage.
And Tanya Williams openly states on her website, and I quote, "Many, many years ago, I suffered from a severe eating disorder. My body image was sorely distorted. It wasn't until I was introduced to weightlifting did I understand what real foods did for my body and for my life." So that's an interesting fact about Tanya.
And then we have Ms. IFBB figure pro Corey Matthews, who just recently had a baby, so congratulations to Corey. But she said at the early age of 7, you know, she had lost a parent, her father, who was killed in a air, he was in the Air Force, he was an Air Force pilot, and he was killed during routine training. So she remembered that, you know, throughout high school, she was battling with eating disorders, and it continued into her adult life. But, you know, she was able to turn it around and, you know, be a successful athlete, and now she's even, you know, a proud mommy. So congrats to Corey.
And then there's Tyra Lee Hutchins. Now, this is in her, on her website as well. "For many years, I battled anorexia, bulimia, exercise bulimia. You name the eating disorder, I experienced it." So there you go. She's right there. You know, actually, I tried to get her on the show because I really wanted to have her talk about all the different types of elements of different eating disorders. Maybe next time.
Yeah, maybe we can get her on the next show.
Definitely.
But also Miss Pauline Norden, another IFBB pro. You know, look at where she is today, and she had overcome anorexia. And now she's much into fitness nutrition, and you see that she's gotten into MMA fighting as well as competing on the pro stage. So I think she actually has a website. You can visit her at her website, which is spiderdiet.com.
Great. Yeah, she's been through a lot, too. And I actually heard on her level that she was actually part of the Biggest Loser in Canada.
Is she really?
That's what I had read. So that's interesting, too, about her.
I think you need to be part of the Biggest Loser in the U.S.
Right? No doubt. No doubt. Damn.
And I am always going to remind you who your co-host is.
That's right. Chrissy Chin.
When you're making the big dollars.
Oh, okay, Chrissy. Listen, let's do our most controversial segment of the hour, and we'll lighten things up a bit because it has been a bit intense. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm sweating over here. I mean, we had some crazy facts going on and a lot of heated talk about eating disorders, but, you know, we like to lighten things up a bit, and we like to open up the email bag. Right or wrong, Chrissy? Let's do it.
All right, but, you know, since you said, you know, Chrissy, you know, these are going to get worse, and we're going to get more and more of these crazy ones, you know, now that we started the segment, and I have. So I just wanted to share that. And, of course, you know what mine relates to. You just know.
I can only imagine. I hope the word doesn't start with a P, Chrissy.
I can't help it.
And ends with an N. Ness.
I get
P.
At least one
it starts with
P picture a week.
It starts with a P and it ends with a Ness.
And it's not princess.
Right, exactly. It's not princess. Oh, my God. Oh,
God. I can't believe that I keep getting these pictures. And, you know, I always forward them to you so you can understand what I'm seeing in front of me, you know? And I was like, I just can't believe I'm looking at this. It's like my computer screen right now, you know?
I want to encourage all listeners, please send in your photos of your appendages to Chrissy Chin for our radio show. Oh, my God.
Listen, I'll think you're cute even if you're wearing boxes or drawers, okay?
Oh, my gosh. Well, here's mine.
You know, it was a very short email, but, you know, I think his picture was the bulk of it. You know, that's what he meant to, you know, portray that, you know, this is the pic. This is the pic, Chrissy, okay? So he just goes, hi, Chrissy, here's my posing pic.
Love it.
Do you think you have bigger biceps or you're stronger than me? Do you think you can lift me up and, you know, squat press me or bench press me? And then he was like, I think you should use this picture as your wallpaper, you know, on your computer screen. And he goes, kind regards. And, you know, of course, we don't disclose any names. So I'm like, bigger biceps, squat press. I'm like, what's this guy talking about? You know, so, you know, of course, you got to do what you got to do. You got to scroll down, right, Clet?
Always so got to scroll.
So I scroll down, and he doesn't show his face, you know, and he starts off with a front double bicep, okay? Now, let me just tell you, I think his arm's about the size when I first started competing, and then I scroll down, and I'm like, okay, and the scary thing is that, okay, not only is he completely naked, and yes, he does show me his penis, okay, but it looks like he's at an office, like he's doing this at work.
Totally inappropriate. Totally inappropriate.
Could you imagine if you were working in an office setting, Clint, and you went to, say, talk to a supervisor, and you walk in, and they're doing a front double bicep naked.
I hope there wasn't video cameras, because they're all over the place at these offices these days. There's no
you know,
no secrets.
Now. So, yes, he took a picture of his penis doing front double bicep in his office and sent it to me and wants me to use it as my wallpaper.
Oh, my God, I love it. But I have another crazy request for the old Colletster over here.
So, they love Colletster.
Here it goes. I'm interested in being a trampling foot worship slave for a female bodybuilder. You, Colette. I'm also interested in buying some custom-made videos to my specifications regarding my foot fetishes. These involve toenail polishing or stepping on your own feces. I'm not making
ew.
This... Ew, Chrissy.
Ew.
It would be...
My egg whites are about to come up.
I know. It would be necessary for the video to include calves as well as your feet. Please give me the quotations for such services. Well, Chrissy, how much should I charge for that? Any thoughts? I mean...
I would say,
because you know I'm considering
it. All species, you can raise the rate a little bit.
That's what I figure. I mean, gosh, I don't want to... Listen, I don't want to step on anybody's feces. Definitely not my own and nobody else's. You know what I mean? It's very... Hey, man, like I say every week, whatever gets people going, you know, who am I to judge? You know, who am I to judge?
There are some bizarre requests for you, Clint.
I know.
Well, everyone, keep those emails come rolling in, and we'd love to share yours next week. But our new segment we have now is Bitform email questions. So we've actually gotten a quite number of responses on both Muscle Central and RxMuscle.com and also in the women's section. So we thank all our listeners for that. But this question, Colette, actually comes from someone we know quite well. Me a little bit and you, kind of a cute little sexy guy, by the name of Nutri-Troy. Nutri-Troy's question to us this week was, hi, Colette and Chrissy. As you know, I work with male and female clients for contest prep, and this question arises quite often. Can you please answer it for me as well as for your listeners? And the question is, after a show, I feel completely just out of control with my eating. I don't know if I should still be following my contest diet or have cheat meals. I honestly just feel totally out of control and feel powerless when it comes to food. What is considered normal eating? Thanks.
Chrissy, I can't tell you how often this comes up and how this is, you know, such a problem. And it's like after the show, you're like, well, what do I do now? I mean, how do I eat? I forgot how to eat. And you and I could go back and forth, okay, and say, okay, well, this is normal. You should have this amount of carbs, this amount of protein, this amount of... But I'm not going to do that. I want you and I to actually read something, which I know is definitely difficult because you know me. I just learned how to read yesterday sometimes when I start reading on the radio. But it is actually a good quote. I remember this very vividly when I was getting my master's in nutrition. And this was... something that we talked about when we talked about eating disorders in one of my classes, and I really thought I would read this to you because I actually sifted through my old textbooks and stuff, and I found this definition of normal eating. And I'm going to start it off, Chrissy, and then you jump into the next paragraph.
Okay, sounds good.
Just listen to the words of it. I mean, when you really want to listen to what normal eating is, here we go. Normal eating is being able to eat when you're hungry and continue eating until you are satisfied. It's being able to choose foods you like and eat it and truly get enough of it, not just stop because you think you should. Normal eating is being able to use some moderate constraint to your food selection to get the right food, but not being too restrictive that you miss out on the pleasures of food. Normal eating is giving yourself permission to eat sometimes because you're happy, you're sad, you're bored, or because it feels good. Normal eating is 3 meals a day most of the time, but it can also be choosing to munch along the way.
It is leaving some cookies on the plate because you know you can have some again tomorrow, or it is eating more now because they taste so wonderful and they're fresh. Normal eating is overeating at times, feeling stuffed and uncomfortable. It is also undereating at times and wishing you had more. Normal eating takes up some of your time and attention, but keeps its place as only one important area of your life.
In short, normal eating is flexible. It varies in response to your emotions, your schedule, your hunger, and your proximity to food. I mean, I really always liked that because that really says it all. Now, whether you can do that or not is totally, entirely not as easy as it sounds, but I think that really is a description of what normal is, you know? When you were a kid, you know what I mean? You kind of remember that before it got all complicated.
And I think it brought up a really good key point that we need to emphasize is that, you know, it takes up some of your time and attention, not all, you know, and that it's only one important area of life. You don't let it consume your whole life and, you know, structure your life around your eating, which sometimes people do.
I agree with you. That was the most poignant point. I think you said it perfectly. That one sentence, if we read nothing else, that was the one sentence that I think describes normal eating. So, again, it was a great question. And, you know, I think it's, you know, you might want to listen to that a couple times, really, because I think there's a lot there. You know, we could analyze every sentence, honestly. But on that note, on normal eating and everything that we've talked about throughout the whole course of the first segment, I think it's going to be great now to see the views of our following guests, which is going to be, we're starting with Christy Hawkins, we've got Sandy Williamson, which is Sandy Rinelli, the head judge, and we also have Emery Miller, and we have actually a couple other interviews that we're going to have on podcast. But, I mean, let's see their perspective. Let's see, you know, what their thoughts are, and we're going to ask some kind of critical questions and see what their thoughts are on eating disorders. So hopefully we can...
And I think it's great that, you know, when other people see, wow, these are prominent people within our industry, you know, that are openly admitting to, you know, having some type of eating disorder and that we're able to overcome it. So, you know, we have to thank our guests even before they, you know, come on air with us for taking the time and being willing to talk about such a sensitive topic.
Because just to know that you're not alone can be inspiring enough to make you change or get help.
Oh, absolutely.
On that note, why don't we take a break? We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Sounds good. See you then.
Muscle Girls, Inc.
ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, author L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition. The Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Species Nutrition.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Hi, this is Monica Brand, and you're listening to Muscle Girls, Inc. with Colette and Chrissy.
She was the 2007 overall nationals winner and one of the youngest female bodybuilders to turn professional. She is much more than a bodybuilder, but a graduate of Caltech and has a PhD in chemical engineering. She may one day find the cure for cancer. The person I am talking about is none other than Christy Hawkins. Hi, Christy. How are you doing?
Hi, Colette. I'm doing well. How are you?
We're excellent over here. We really appreciate you doing this.
Yes, oh, thank you, Christy.
All right, so Christy, here we go. Let's jump into it.
Okay.
This particular episode, we are addressing eating disorders. So a lot of the questions are going to have to do with that, but we'll do some other stuff about your life too. But we'll just jump right into the first question is, tell us about how your struggles with weight and tell us about your struggles with weight and at what age they began.
Well, I was kind of unique in that I found myself struggling with anorexia at a very young age. I was like 11 or 12 years old. So when I was just in middle school, I'd been pretty heavy as a kid and just found myself, I would stop eating. I wouldn't eat lunch and was trying to lose weight. I wanted to be 6 in. And I just struggled with it for years and years. And finally, my mom had always taken me to the gym. And instead of doing aerobics and jazzercise, which I also enjoyed, I kind of drifted towards the weight room. And so I just started lifting weights, and I just fell in love with it. And then as soon as I got older, I started taking it more seriously. And also found some people that got me started into bodybuilding, Robert and Helen Irby, who are still back in Longview, Texas, and they got me to do my first show and kind of taught me everything I needed to know.
Christy, you were so young. I mean, you were in middle school when you were experiencing this. Do you remember back then at that age what you were feeling?
I really don't. I think it was more I was just unhappy with myself. And yeah, it's hard to know what we're thinking or feeling when we're at such a young age, but I just did not like the way I looked. I wanted to be a stick, and I remember, I mean, I got down to like 70 pounds, and I was twirling and dancing and that, so I don't know if that kind of contributed to it. Like, I wanted to be skinny for those sorts of activities, but it's just kind of bizarre how our mind works, and how all these things come together to give us this ideal of what we want to look like and how we'll do anything to
to get there.
So Christy, how does it go? Like, it's so funny because you talk about, I wanted to be stick thin. And then how does it go from, I want to be stick thin, and then I start working out with weights. And then when you started working out with weights, then did you ever say to myself, you know what, I looked in a magazine and I like the way these women with muscle look? Or how did this all kind of transcend, you know what I mean, to transcend?
Yeah, it's more the fact that I just fell in love with weight training and I kind of felt empowered again. And I thought, well, this is what it feels to be strong. I liked the way it kind of gave my body shape. So I no longer wanted to be a stick. I wanted to have muscles and have curves. And, you know, it was just a whole different ideal. I do remember seeing, I actually wanted to look like Monica Brandt. I remember that. She was very muscular for the time. And also seeing female bodybuilders like Linda Murray and Kim Chavesky on Geraldo. And, you know, just kind of being intrigued with it all. So just as I fell in love with the process of becoming a bodybuilder, I found myself wanting to pursue that. And if the end result was looking like a bodybuilder, I was perfectly happy with that.
Do you think the weight training alone helped you overcome your eating disorder, or did you ever receive any type of therapy for it?
So I was in therapy briefly, very briefly, like when I was really young. And that never resolved anything for me. So I really think I just kind of found this solution on my own and what made me happy, but also kind of dealt with these issues that I was having.
So, Christy, you started competing really young, like at 17.
Yeah, I did my first show at 17.
Which is, like, that's really young. I mean, I can't even, I remember I started training when I was 19, so you were even two years ahead of me before I even started training, but... do you think, now this is a really interesting question, and we're going to propose this to like other guests that we're having on today, but do you think that the idea of competing is another form of acting out a type of eating disorder? Because it gives you that restrictive type of behavior.
Absolutely.
Talk about that.
Absolutely, and it's something that I've always been aware of, and I think you have to be aware of if you know you have these control issues with this food. And it's something that I liked because... first of all, you have to totally change your attitude about food. Food is no longer the enemy. It's a tool. It's if I want to look this way, this is what I'm going to eat. But you have to be very careful too when you're dieting not to take it to the extreme. You know, so you're eating like 1 ounce of chicken. You know, so you definitely just have to be very self-aware when you're doing these things. But it's something that as somebody who is anorexic, I'm a very good dieter. I can say I'm not going to eat this and that's it. But I do have to always be aware and make sure that, you know, I eat, you know, a reasonable amount of food, even when I'm dieting.
Right. Well, I don't know, Christy, if you've ever seen Christy Hawkins compete, this is one girl that can get ridiculously striated glutes. And you know what that takes. She's insanely disciplined. And you can see that. That's like why I wanted to ask you that question, because I know it's just a way, I mean, you have that type of dedication and discipline, and it comes from that type of behavior, just being able to do that.
Yes, exactly. And I've always been aware of that. And I know that, yeah, I'm a really good dieter because of it. So
Christy, since your first competition was 17, which is, like Colette said, very young, I know I didn't start until way after 17 years of age. Do you think that really had, was really like a helping tool in helping you overcome your anorexia, like starting that young?
I definitely think so, because I was still kind of struggling with it in high school. So I was no longer extremely anorexic, but I just wasn't happy with how I looked. And now it's just second nature to me. So, you know, what's normal to me is packing my meals, and I've just been doing it for so long that it's my lifestyle, and it's just ingrained in me. So it makes everything very, very simple and very natural for me.
Now, Christy, here's another interesting thought about how we can put a different face on an eating disorder. I know I've done it, but I just want to ask you if you've done it. Have you ever done, like, the guilt cardio, I like to call it? Like, you've eaten too much, and then the next day you find yourself doing, like, I know one time I did, like, three, 4 hours in a row just because I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I ate what I ate, like, the night before. Have you ever found yourself doing that and going to yourself, oh, my gosh, this is totally not right?
Yes, even when I've had, like, scheduled cheat meals, you know, the next day I'll be doing more cardio. And fortunately, I realized pretty young that was not the right thing to do. I did that as a kid, too. with exercise nervosa, where if I felt like I'd eaten too much, or even if I hadn't eaten anything, I would just go on long walks or do aerobics tape and things like that. So I was pretty aware of that type of behavior. So now I try not to do it, but now my body's kind of so used to it, and you realize that, hey, if you eat good most of the time, then it's okay to go out and enjoy a meal with your friends. But I'm just now getting to that point where I can do that and not feel guilty. So,
but do you ever find yourself ever falling back into having any of those disordered type eating behaviors?
Not really. Because I don't really associate food with emotion, so okay. I don't tend to binge eat. And I'm to the point now where I'm okay with eating my normal meals. And you know, when you're dieting, you're so hungry anyway that that you never think, okay, well, I'm not going to eat all of this, or I'm going to skip a meal. So I'm pretty straight with everything right now. I know it's easy to fall into, like, to binge eating and things like that. So, you know, usually the only time I really binge is right after a show, but I think that's expected.
Chrissy, what do you think, like, was the turning point? Okay, here you are, you're skipping lunch, you're thinking, I want to be stick thin, you're thinking, well, the best thing to do is over-exercise and under-eat. All right, what was the point? I don't even know if there's a switch or something changed your mind, or somebody said to you, Chrissy, in order for you to train in the gym, to gain muscle, to feel good, you need to eat, and that's it. Tomorrow you have to start eating five meals a day. What was that switch? I mean, how did it happen?
You know, I think it was probably when I was weight training every day, and Helen and Robert approached me, and they said, look, you know, this is how we eat, and I saw them doing it, and I liked the way that they looked, so I liked the results, and they just taught me how to do it, and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I don't think it was an overnight thing. I probably think it took me, you know, several months to get to that point where I was eating consistently, just like it does, you know, if you were to start any type of diet, you kind of ease into it. So I think it was just the motivation of seeing other people doing it. And actually, a lot of people at my gym were really into it at the time. And yeah, that just got me to do the same.
Chrissy, you know, during the off season, then, how are you typically eating during the off season? Do you stay relatively within your competition weight, or do you go a little off?
I'm about 170 now. My competition weight is probably going to be about 145. So, okay. To most people, I would seem pretty heavy.
Not for me, Chrissy. I'm 180. So.
And I've gotten up to 180, but you know, I felt good at that weight. That's just where I'm comfortable. And if you actually look at me, I'm very lean in certain places. You know, my lower body stays really, really lean. I tend to hold it around the middle, but you know I can definitely lose the weight, and as far as me in day-to-day life, this is where I'm comfortable. I just can't stay lean. Even right after a show, I carry just a lot of bulk. And so it's only gotten to the point where I'm very comfortable with that. My off-season eating is, you know, basically the same foods you eat on the contest. I have started eating more carbs and stuff in the off-season, just so I have kind of a differential, so my body gets used to eating a little bit more. Similar to the diet, you know, my body actually responds, as opposed to staying on the contest diet all year, and when it's time to diet, I'm stuck, you know, and you have to go to less and less food. So I definitely made it a point to try to eat a little bit more in the off season, and my body kind of equilibrates at the same point. So, but I eat the same foods every day. I always take all my meals to work. And to me, it's not so much the fact that, oh my God, I can't eat anything else, but it makes it simple for me because I have just a very busy lifestyle, and I work at least 12 hours a day at my new job, and it was the same when I was in grad school, and, you know, then I just go straight to the gym, come home, and go to bed. So I don't have a lot of time to be going out to lunch and, you know, going out for food, especially five times a day or six times a day. So.
Well, Christy's a lot like me, Chrissy, because her and I like to train heavy, and I think that also facilitates a little more food intake to some degree. Don't you think, Chrissy, on some level?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still training.
I mean, if you and I just danced around if we just danced around the gym and did light weights all the time, I mean, I just think that's a different mentality, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
And I think what Chrissy said is very important. You know, she may be 170, but she feels comfortable where she's at, yeah. and she looks great at where she's at. And, you know, you're at 180, and you look beautiful the way you're at. And, you know, as long as everyone feels comfortable, you know, it's not so much sometimes about that number on that scale. And I think too many women, especially, get fixated on what's that number on that scale.
Or chasing that mm-hmm. contest shape, which we'll
yeah.
talk about. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's
yeah, and it's also it's also the fact that your body kind of equilibrates there. It's not like I'm 170 and it keeps going up and up and up, like I'm actively gaining weight. This is just where, you know, I'm set, I'm comfortable, and I do mm-hmm. maintain my weight, you know, if I see it going too far one way or the other. Even if I see myself actually losing weight, I'll think, okay, well, am I stressed out? Am I not eating enough? You know, so I try to maintain that point, so.
Well, let's talk about something fun, Christy. What's your favorite cheat food?
Gosh, I haven't had anything in a while. But I like just the hamburger and fries.
There you go.
That's kind of what I
the American
get,
standard.
Yeah.
That's one of my
yeah,
favorites.
Yeah, exactly.
And Christy, I know myself, I'm always looking in the mirror. There's something I want to improve. There's something I want to make better. If there was one thing that you could change about yourself, if you were to look at yourself right now, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. I wish I was leaner around the middle. It's really hard for me to get my abs to come in. So I'm kind of the opposite of most women that I just don't hold it in my lower body, but I hold it around the middle. So, yeah, if I could change that, I definitely would. Because people are always like, oh, you're a bodybuilder. Let me see your six-pack. And I'm like, okay, I don't have that right now. So, but, you know, it's a trade-off. So.
Yeah, I think everyone has a certain area, like you said, is either the lower half, which most women are that lower half,
mm-hmm.
but in your case, it's the abs. Like my husband, he's the same way. He's like, my abs are the last thing to come in all the time. He gets so frustrated with that.
Yep.
Well, Christy, you should be really proud, obviously, of everything you've accomplished. It's incredible. I mean, we could go into her resume. It's unbelievable. But on the bodybuilding front, I mean, what's next for you in the world of bodybuilding? Where do you see yourself taking this, you know, business, how seriously, considering you have quite an impressive career?
Yeah, I mean, my job is definitely first, especially, you know, since I graduated. I've been at this new job for only about 4 or 5 months now, so I'm really trying to hit it hard and establish myself there. So that's why I decided to forego the New York Pro, but as I'm sure you talked about, there's only 2 pro shows for the women. So I am planning to do the Atlantic City in September, and from there we'll just see. I'd love to qualify for the Olympia, and I think I'm definitely going to keep competing. You know, my career will definitely allow that. I mean, I do have a flexible schedule. I don't have to work hard. I choose to work hard. So, yeah, I can definitely do that until, you know, I do want to have a family someday, so I think that's probably going to slow down the competing more than my career.
Exciting.
Well, speaking about family and a personal note, I know you've been dating Brandon Ray for about 2 years. What is next for the both of you?
Actually, less than 2 years, but yeah, it seems like it's been a while. So I'm currently in the San Francisco area, and he is in Washington, D.C., but he works for CNN, and there's a San Francisco bureau for CNN, so he should be making that transfer fairly soon, and we'll just take it from there. We're just incredibly happy and compatible, and yeah, it's wonderful.
Christy, do you see yourself, I mean, you kind of answered this question, but I mean, do you see yourself, I mean, let's just say you have kids, and let's just say you have a family or whatever, but it doesn't even seem to matter. I mean, do you see yourself, because I know I could see myself doing this, but being like a Betty Pariso or Lisa Auckland, I don't know, maybe 45, 50, who cares? Just jump back up on stage just because you can.
I think if I'm still able to compete at that level, which I don't see why I wouldn't be, you know, women tend to get better as they get older. So I definitely don't see an age limitation on it. It's more like if I get up on stage like that, I want to be competitive, which Betty and Lisa definitely are. So yeah, it totally depends. I definitely see myself keeping up with it and keeping up with the weight training, even if I take a hiatus for whatever reason. So, that's definitely a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out, but it depends on how I feel at the time.
I agree.
Well, Christy, you know, you've accomplished a lot. I mean, you have a PhD, you turned professional, you look great every time you compete. And, you know, you overcame, you know, anorexia, which is amazing. But there's other girls, you know, that are currently struggling with their weight and other issues and stuff. So what tips or advice can you give someone that might be a fellow competitor that's struggling with similar type issues in order to help them overcome what they're going through?
I think the most important thing is if you know you have these issues and you're choosing to compete in, you know, bodybuilding or figure fitness, you just really need to be very, very self-aware, and mm-hmm. Which I've always been. If you're engaging in certain behaviors, like, you know, you're doing extra cardio after you eat too much, you just really need to be aware and kind of rein those things in. And also, it's probably wise to work with a nutritionist until you really learn it and can control it, to have somebody tell you, hey, it's okay, you need to eat this amount of chicken and this much food, you know, mm-hmm. you're not going to get the results that you want.
That's great. I mean, I think the key here is that Christy basically used the world of bodybuilding and competing and to actually help her with her struggles, because if you look at it prior to, she was choosing not to eat. So the fact that she got into training and in the gym, it helped her to start eating. And I mean, for her, I think that's great. And I hope we have other stories like that, because I know that there's a lot of girls struggling every day with some form, whatever way you want to put it in a package, type of disordered eating behavior. And I think it's inspirational to see that you can overcome it. It can be overcome. That, I mean, Christy, I think you agree. It's an everyday battle. It doesn't just disappear. You have to think about it. You have to be aware. And I think that's the
exactly.
key.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Christy, for your time.
Yeah.
And I know it's a sensitive subject, but I'm telling you, we hope to inspire. And it inspired me. So.
Yeah. Thank you. We greatly sure, appreciate it, Christy.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks. And we'll check back with you. Maybe we'll have you on again as you get closer to the Atlantic City. How about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd love that.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Christy. Have a good day.
Take care.
Muscle Girls, Inc.
ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Hi, this is Javelle Little Bunyania, and you are listening to Muscle Girls, Inc.
Well, Colette, our next guest is a pioneer in the sport of bodybuilding. She plays an integral role in both the NPC and IFBB as a head official. She's definitely inspiration to many in the sport, including myself. Please welcome to our show, Sandy Williamson. Welcome to Muscle Girls, Inc., Sandy.
Thank you, Christy. Thank you, Colette.
Sandy, you have a long history with both the NPC and IFBB. And I was wondering, how long exactly have you been involved with both of those leagues now?
I've actually been involved. I was involved with the actually just the women's side of the sport. It was at the time it was known as the AFWB before it combined with the NPC, and I've been involved with them since 1982. I officially became a judge in the NPC in 1984, and I've been I've been judging the NPC ever since. And I probably 1986 I actually became an IFBB judge. That was the first time that I, you know, I took the women's team to the world championships.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sandy, I'm sure you get this question all the time, but I'm going to ask it. You know, being the head judge of many of the NPC level events, what is the most difficult part about judging?
I think the most difficult part, at least, you know, for myself, is that I really think, you know, one of the responsibilities of a judge is to be able to give feedback to the competitors. And to, you know, to tell someone why they, you know, place them where they distance. I mean, you know, these placements, you know, impact everyone, you know, tremendously, not just at the contest, but, you know, in the rest of their life sometimes, you know, depending on what level of competition that they're at. And I just think as the numbers, especially for the women's shows, as the numbers of athletes have grown, you know, this mm-hmm. has become, you know, a little bit harder and harder for me to do. And yet I think it's such, you know, like I said, I think it's such an important part, you know, of the competition. And I just think that, you know, as a judge, you should be able to give that feedback to the individual competitors.
I know it helps a lot. I mean, I know it changes. I remember one year somebody told me, well, Colette, your rear delts. I mean, you get crazy. You're like, I'm doing rear delts. I mean, really, what you say makes a huge difference on how we train.
Well, you know what?
Year.
And, you know, and I made all the mistakes, hopefully early on. But absolutely, I think as a judge, sometimes you don't realize, you know, like the feedback that you give, like how the athletes, they really do take it to heart. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, you know, what level you are at, you know, competitor-wise, whether you're a local show or, you know, a national show, whatever those judges say, you really do take to heart.
Definitely.
And you can go back and spend a whole year working on, like you said, a certain body part, you know, whether it's a conditioning issue. And, you know, if they were not, you know, really truthful or maybe just didn't remember you, so that they, you know, they didn't really give you, specific enough information. I mean, you could spend a lot of time and a lot of money trying to correct something that really doesn't pertain to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, along those lines, Andy, I know, you know, you are super kind enough, and you spend, I mean, hours sometimes after a show speaking with athletes, and I know myself, I just stayed at long lines waiting for you at Junior Nationals when I compete at that level, and you give very valuable and specific advice. How do you remember when there's like 40 in a class on that figure skate sometimes? How do you remember so much detail about, you know, each specific competitor especially when you're the head judge?
Okay, well, and that's where the dilemma is starting to come for me, because the numbers of the athletes have grown so much in the individual classes. Now, again, if I've judged you a couple times before, it becomes much easier because I can remember, you know, who you are, what I saw before, mm-hmm. and, you know, that type of thing. But it's really, really hard at the national shows for some of the first-time competitors, because I have my own little cheat sheet that I use, because you're right, as a head judge, you're not only, you know, you're not only calling out the compulsories that you want the athletes to do, you're also mm-hmm. Interacting with the judges on your panel to see who they want to see, who they want to compare, and trying to make my own little notes. And lots of times, you know, I'm judging at the same time. So it does get, and that's why sometimes I feel bad when some of the athletes do stand in line, and then, you know, for some reason on that one, you know, individual person, I have, like, so little sometimes. It just depends where you are in the class, how many there were in your class. And like I said, mm-hmm. if I've seen you, you know, if this is the first time I've seen you, or if I've seen you, you know, in the past. And, you know, and that's kind of why Linda Woodhoit and I started in the beginning now to do, because lots of times at some of the national shows, we see a lot of the girls making the same common mistakes. So we'll kind of start out with, you know, I know if you're going to wait here, it's going to be, it could be a couple hours, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
after you've been dieting for, you know, months and training for, you know, for years, the last thing you want to do is stand. You want to go be able to spend time with your your family and your friends and stuff, and you do want to go out and celebrate a little bit. So we try to go over, like, the kind of the general things that we see a lot of the athletes doing. I really try to get the athletes, I always say, you know, please bring your trainers, bring your, you know, your spouses or whatever back with you. If it's, you know, if it's not backstage, page if it's an area where they can come back, you know, easily so that they can actually hear the information. I also try to say to them, I try to be upfront and say, if it's a first time, you know, and you don't want to wait, you know, because you might wait and I might not have a lot of detail. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to do that so that, because, you know, I know girls do get frustrated because they think they're going to get these long, you know, this long list of things that they need to work on. And, you know, and sometimes they don't. And sometimes, especially at the national shows, when you're looking at the best of the best, those top 10 or 15 girls, there's not 20% difference between them. There's like 2 or 3% difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to be giving you this whole list of things to work on. You might find out that maybe I thought, you know, your skin tone was a little bit off or your color was a little bit off or you just needed a little bit tighter here. And they're like, yeah, but I was 12. I know, but you're 12th out of the best of the best.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we do change judges. That's one of the things I think a lot of people don't realize. We do change judges on every panel. So if you're second or third on one panel, if you change the judges, I mean, this is not a, you know, this is not a scientific judge. It's not like you're going to, you know, run a 50-yard dash and a clock is going to time you. You know, there is a huge subjective, you know, portion of our judging, you know. And again,
mm-hmm.
It's not as much in bodybuilding. It's a little bit more in fitness. It's a lot more in figure. And it's going to be a huge thing, in bikini. So, you know, I always tell girls, you know, when you're willing to place yourself in front of, you know, however many judges there, you just can't let it be the end all to you. Because with another panel of judges, it could change a couple places. I always tell competitors, if you know that you are a little bit better than you were the last time, then you've already won the battle.
I mean, that's a really good, honest thing to say, too, because sometimes they are, especially like in figure, I mean, they're... And some girls are, I don't know how I was fourth, but you were fourth amongst the best, and you really look great. I mean, I always say, I don't know if this is right, Miss Sandy, but it's nice to be in front of the judges. The more they see you, the more they see your consistency, I always say that that helps. I mean, maybe there's nothing you were doing wrong that particular show, but you just keep being seen, you know?
Absolutely. You know what? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, I mean, you know, again, sometimes, you know, some of the athletes, you know, especially the newcomers to the national show, they don't realize, though, when they look at some of the pros, because all of a sudden they just see that they're a pro. They don't realize, like, with Adela, it took her, like, 7 or 8 years to get there.
Wow, yeah.
Because they don't see her competing, you know what I mean? You don't see those girls in the magazine that much. Oh yeah, I mean, Adela started with us in '95. She was one of the first in the first fitness, show that we've ever done. And people don't realize that, you know, it took her a lot of national shows to finally, you know, get her routine to where, you know, it brought her up enough to get her pro card. I think people think that it's, you know, that you're going to do one or two shows. And again, it does happen to, you know, a very rare amount of girls, but you know, it does happen. But for most of the time, for most of the girls, it's a lot of competing, and it's not just a year or two.
Right. Well, Sandy, I know also you're a registered nurse. Are you currently still practicing? And if you are, I mean, how do you balance being an RN, judging, and your family time?
Well, I wasn't as good. I didn't do it as well in the beginning. I think the older you get, you kind of, you know, put your priorities a little bit better perspective. You know, since I've, you know, just recently married a couple of years ago, I've cut back in my, you know, in my nursing a little bit. So I work part-time now nursing, which makes it, a lot easier. And I've also cut back in doing some of the local shows. I don't do as many local shows as I used to do. I mean, I used to judge 35 weekends out of the year.
Oh my goodness.
And now I probably do about 15.
Right. Balance. It's all about balance. That's our programming today. It's all about balance.
and you know what? Absolutely. And I think sometimes I think women were so bad at that.
Totally.
Because we tend to, you know, to try to be a lot of things to a lot of different people. And I think as you get older, you realize, you know what? You got to pick and choose. You can't be everything to everyone. You know, I always say this, especially with the women competitors. Because most of them are mothers. They're full-time workers, and especially at the national level, now you're a national competitor or a professional competitor in the sport, and how many hours and how to balance all three of those areas of your life, you know what I mean? And, you know, not to take away from each of them.
Right.
Cindy, we our show circles around eating disorders, and we discuss our personal accounts with it as well as having guests on, and I actually observed on the IFBB website that you were actually diagnosed with NRS yourself, and I was wondering, you know, how long you actually battled with it before you were diagnosed, and what do you think was the underlying cause of it for you?
I battled with it probably a long time. One of the reasons is because you're talking, I was actually diagnosed in 74, so you're talking, you know, 33 years ago, or 34 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even in the textbooks at the time. It was just, you know, some of the physicians were actually putting a name, you know, to, you know, women that have had, you know, a certain amount of symptoms, you know, certain types of symptoms type thing. I mean, because for a long time they thought I had leukemia, they thought I had cancer, you know, because mm-hmm. at 5'7", I was actually 72 pounds was my lowest.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I think part of it is just, I mean, a lot of it I think has to do with your environment, you know, because it's an emotional disease. So it's, you know, and I think in our society, we're, you know, it's so much into how we, you know, what the physical appearance is, you know, and I think girls at such a young age, you know, are hit with that. I mean, they, you know, it's in every magazine, it's in your Barbie and, you know, doll, it's, you know, it's on every TV show that you watch, you know, and I think, you know, at first, you know, people would look at me and say, why did you ever get into bodybuilding? It's such a physical sport, it's, you know what I mean, especially coming from an, you know what I mean, it makes you want to look at, you know what I mean, become better and better and better, you know, physically, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So they would, you know what I mean, it would, people would say to me, you know, isn't that even harder for you, because you were anorexic, it even makes it more difficult that you're in a sport where everyone is just, and it was like, no, because I think what really is harmful to, this is again my own opinion, to our society, is it's the models that you see, the girl, you know, the Hollywood scene that you see, and the women are, you know, 5'8", 5'9", and they're 110, 115 pounds.
Well,
you know, I actually think that bodybuilding, fitness figure, whatever part of the sport you're in, you know, is actually a help to women, because it teaches you that you can have a really nice, you know, outward appearance, and you don't have to be super, super skinny. You're actually going to do better with a little bit of muscle. You know what I mean? Because I'm going back 30-some years here. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole philosophy then was you didn't eat all day, you only tried to eat one meal a day, you kept your calories as low as you could. So one of the first things you got rid of is you got rid of protein. And it wasn't until I got into bodybuilding that I really learned nutrition and realized, no, if you add a little muscle to your body, you're going to up your own body metabolism. If you eat small meals more times a day, and I know, like, to you and Colette, this is like, you know, it'd be like, how could anybody not know that? But 35 years ago, that none of that information was anywhere. It was only in the bodybuilding, you know, sport, and it was such a small cult sport that most people, you know, never even, that information never was printed anywhere.
So, Sandy, what was
and,
like? What?
You know, I eat more now than I ever ate when I was in my teens and 20s. You know, it's because I've learned through bodybuilding, you know, the types of food to eat, how to eat, you know what I mean? And it's actually helped me and helped my, you know, my own body metabolism.
Well, what was the turning point, Sandy, where you said, okay, I'm a 72-pound, 5'7" woman. I mean, that's very thin. And then how did you, I mean, were you in treatment and in a hospital? I mean, did somebody say, snap you out of this?
I was actually, I had just graduated from nursing school. I was actually nursing nursing in the ICU. And my unit director of the ICU pulled me off the floor and said, either you go see someone or, you know, or we're not going to allow you, you know, you're not going to be able to nurse here anymore.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was really lucky because they gave me a couple choices of physicians, hooked up with a female physician that had already started to see symptoms, you know, anorexia-type symptoms in young girls and stuff, and so was really current, you know what I mean, on the disease and stuff, and she's the one that actually diagnosed me, and she helped me, you know, for, you know, the next 5 years to battle, because it's just an emotional thing. It's, you know, it's like you can't decide you're going to, you know, be 72 pounds at 5'7".
Right.
You know what I mean? There's an emotional component. I couldn't do that now, you know, if you said to me, I'll give you $1 million, because there's there's so many other components that can allow you to get through the day on 300 calories a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a huge emotional component that is part of that, you know, that disease. And once you work through that, you can't starve yourself.
So what was that like when you started eating, when somebody started teaching, or who started teaching you, look, we need to start you with eating 5 meals a day and start eating protein. Was that scary? Do you remember? Can you go back that many years? Like,
oh, absolutely I can. It was my ex-husband, absolutely. He's the one that, you know, took me to see the first Miss Olympia with Rachel McLish, because, you know, in my mind, again, it, you know, when you're going back those many years, if he said to me, you want to see a bodybuilding show, a female bodybuilding show, and you're talking 1980, because that was the first Miss Olympia in Philadelphia, and I was like, and I want to look like a Russian swimmer. Why? And he's like, no, these girls are really thin. I'm like, how can you be thin with muscle?
Yeah, and, you couldn't understand it, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I went to see that first Miss Olympia, and it was a dinner setup. George Snyder was the promoter, and it was a dinner setup. And Rachel and them looked so big on stage, and when they walked next to you and you realize that they're in a size 3 jean, I joined the member of the Y in our local Y the very next day.
It changed your life, isn't that? That's so exciting. I mean, that, you know, just that ideal changed your view. And,
oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, that Rachel McLish look. It was like beautiful women mm-hmm. with muscle. And again, you know, to me, if you see her off stage in jeans, you think, oh, my God, this girl weighs about 110 pounds. Not realizing, oh, she probably weighs 125 because it's that muscle. It's going to make her more compact, even though she's going to weigh more on the scale. Because, you know, at that time, like I said, you know, women were so involved in what that number is on the scale, but not what, you know, not what you look like.
So how soon after when you started battling and recovering from your eating disorder did you compete? And then how did you feel about your body then? I mean, what was your mindset?
I started to compete in, I mean, I did like a year later. I was obviously a very skinny competitor. I had the leanest down pat. Probably in 1981, I actually did Jim Mannion's Pittsburgh show.
Oh, my gosh.
We laugh about it now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I was one of 18 girls at a show in his, you know, that the Pittsburgh show that's still going on now. That was the first time actually I went there and actually met Candy Sensus, who was second in that show. And Candy at the time, for any of your audience that are too young to know, you know, Candy was one of the first professional, became one of the first professional female bodybuilders too back then with the Rachel McLish. So I met Candy and her husband, and they actually were from my area. And she's actually the one that really got me involved in the judging itself and, you know, involved in the administration part of, you know, of at that time the AFWB, and then, you know, and then that's when, you know, and then when they joined with the NPC, then I just, you know, continued with them.
So it appears, Sandy, that, you know, it was multiple factors that helped you overcome the anorexia. I mean, the doctor that diagnosed you, your ex-husband, seeing Rachel on stage, and what advice can you give other competitors? Because, you know, there's obviously probably others are suffering some type of eating disorder, if not the same, you know, how to overcome it. Because you obviously have done it, and you're super successful, and, you know, you inspire so many women out there. So what advice can you give them?
Is you have to, I mean, you have to change, your self-confidence has to change, okay? And I think part of the problem is as women, whether it's your immediate family, whether it's a spouse, whether it's friends, but somewhere in your surrounding group of people that are very close to you is a lot of negativity. Mm-hmm. And you actually need to be able to take yourself out of that. Just like if you're in a domestic abuse situation, you've got to take yourself, you've got to get to that point where, you know, that you hate life the way it is and you know you got to make a change. And like you said, I was so lucky that, you know, that I hooked up with a physician that was so supportive, that my ex-husband was so supportive. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I was around people that, you know what I mean, that were very supportive to me. And I was, you know, out of my negative situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you had that love and the caring and everything
yeah,
to support
probably,
you to help
you know, and I think that's probably like no matter what, because what, yeah, it doesn't matter what you're addicted to, whether it's
supports
not eating,
him.
You know, it doesn't matter. You know, you somehow you know, and I don't know where you get that from, but you have to get that strength mm-hmm. to be able to take yourself out of that situation, because it doesn't matter who you're with or who you're around and stuff. In the end, it's got to be for yourself. It's okay. Got to be for yourself.
Well, Sandy, what do you think, like, Okay, we know. A lot of our guests on the show actually have talked about their anorexia and how the bodybuilding lifestyle has actually helped them overcome that. But what about, we're really hitting on other types of eating disorders, even something like called orthorexia, where you become fixated on eating too clean, and then binge eating, which I see a lot. I mean, at me, it just has a compelling...
Well, I think that's probably the one aspect of our sport that I could see where that would actually, that it would be more easy, easier for someone to gravitate to.
Right.
Because we do, you do have to eat a lot more calories, but again, the right calories, to gain the muscle and stuff. And I think one of the hard things is that so many of our athletes go up and down so much in weight. And again, not realizing, especially when you're young, that is going to have dire consequences on you, your skin tone, your collagen underneath. You know what I mean? As you get down the line, and again, it's much easier if you eat and you binge. You know what I mean? And you get rid of it, because then you've not, in your mind you've not eaten the calories. But the problem is, I think if you lose weight or keep your weight down in that way, the look is different.
Yeah.
And I don't think, again, when you're that young of a person, you don't realize that you're going to lend yourself to, to ulcers in your stomach, in your esophagus. Mm-hmm. You're going to wear your teeth away from the acid. And, again, not something that's going to hit you right away, but it will 5-10 years down the road, absolutely. And that's, what you see with a lot of people that have done the binging, 5-10 years down the road, and maybe it doesn't even show up for 20 years, but you can have a lot of ulcers and cause a lot of damage in your esophagus that's going to come back to really give you medical problems, in your future life.
I mean, I think that it's so it's so hard, because I think when we talked about this earlier in our show, where people lose focus on what normal eating is, because you get so caught up in this contest diet.
I went through where, and that was one of the problems, the reasons that I really never progressed in the sport, because I was so much to always trying to be in contest shape,
Right, yep.
That I would never allow myself to eat, and, because to gain muscle, you have to gain some body fat.
Yep.
And so you do have to go up and down a little bit. It's when you do like anything else, it's when you do the extremes. And, mm-hmm. you have to be able to stand back. And that's where I think families and friends that are not involved in the sport come in to help you.
Right.
I have 5 brothers and sisters. I have 5 sisters that have no problem looking me in the eye and saying, this eating is nuts, Sandy. Because you do. You get so much in, I only can have egg whites, and I only can have plain chicken, and I only can have tuna. You know what I mean? And you do, and that's fine. But, again, there's that happy medium. And, mm-hmm. I never, when people come to me about, trainers and nutritionists and stuff, I know a couple, trainers and nutritionists that because I don't usually recommend someone, but I know a couple that don't do the extremes with the diet. Don't do, because I just tell people, if you've got to do something that extreme, you're never going to be able to do it for a long term.
Right, and then that's why you get the rebound.
If you have to drop your water, for days before you get on stage, if you have to, you're not, and the problem is you are doing damage to your body. Because our bodies are so, they learn to compensate so well. Mm-hmm. And, you are never going to hold that for a long period of time. And that's, again, that's what helps, that up and down, going up 30 pounds, down 20 pounds. And, again, you don't think about it because you don't really see yourself changing over, maybe a 2-5 year period. But 15, 20 years down the road, when you all of a sudden look a lot older because your skin is hanging, because you have no collagen, because your skin is stretched out, that's what all that is from. It's a shame because I see it a lot,
mm-hmm.
And this sport could be such a healthy sport for most people. Again, it's just not for the ones that take it to that extreme.
I mean, do you ever have people that come to you and probably not as a, but in the sport, or do you think that more or less that competing can in some ways either perpetuate some of these behaviors, though? I mean, what is your aspect on competing? Like, would you ever tell somebody, look, I'm not sure that competing is something for you right now in your life because I think there could be something else going on. Do you ever get that notion? Like,
would I tell somebody that? Oh, absolutely. Oh, I already have.
Good. That's what I was figuring. I mean, because some people look, I've seen the ones on stage that really almost look anorexic. Or, I mean, they should, there's something going on. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, and even with some of the competitors that, you know, they win their local shows, they've done really well at the juniors, and now they're mm-hmm. constantly at the nationals or, you know, or even at the pro level. And it's like, I'm not winning the Miss Olympia. What do I need to do? You know what? We're no different than any other sport. Not every competitor that gets in this sport is going to get a pro card. Not every competitor that becomes a pro is going to win the Miss Olympia. Just like every high school kid that plays basketball and is maybe a state championship is going to end up in the NBA. And the NBA is not going to change their standards
right.
so that every person can be in the NBA.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'll be, you know what I mean? And again, you know, if some of the competitors that I've gotten, you know, to get a relationship because I've talked to them a couple times, you know, after a couple years, I will, you know, if somebody says to me, I really want your opinion, because, again, I know how much it takes out of you just physically, emotionally, financially, mm-hmm. and I'll give my opinion. What are you doing it for? Because if you're doing it because it gives you that motivation to go into the gym and push yourself a little bit more than you would on the set, you know what? Compete till you turn
exactly.
100. Who cares?
Good answer.
But if you're going in it and you're giving up now, if you're letting your career suffer, you're letting your family suffer. We've all seen that.
Yeah.
You know, people leaving husbands and kids. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
Good answer.
That is crazy. And I will tell somebody that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well,
I have
you know,
no...
Sandy, you hit on so many great points, and, you know, we always appreciate all your honesty, and I think, you know, sometimes it's a little hard for people to take constructive criticism at times, but if you're not honest, then how are they going to benefit? So.
Oh, absolutely, and again, you know, again, as a judge, you have to, if I've met you for the first time, obviously, I'm not, because there are plenty of people I think might never make it to the pros, and they end up making it to the pros.
Right.
You know what I mean? Absolutely, because it's not, I mean, yes, genetics play a huge part, but also I've seen people with beautiful genetics, and we've all done it, that should be the Mr. Olympia or should be Miss Olympia, and they're not.
Right.
Because they don't have that determination, you know,
definitely.
And willpower to do that. So, you know what I mean? So you got to be, you know, you got to kind of weigh, you know, but if somebody asks me what my honest opinion is and, you know, I'll sit and talk to them and find out, like I said, why are you doing it? What are you looking for? You know what I mean? And what are you giving up to get there?
Exactly.
You know, and, you know, I just, you know, I've had that talk with, you know, a lot of girls over the years. You know, and
Go ahead, Sandy.
No, I was just going to say, and I just did a seminar down in Florida, and the same thing. It was for, you know, for women, you know, no matter what, you know, area of the sport you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I said. I said, you know, it only you know what, you know, what you did to get to that stage. And the thing is even because, again, you go to the national show, and there might be 40 girls in your class, and you're in that group of 16 and under. And, again, because of our society, you go home feeling like a failure. But as trite as it sounds, for every person up there, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of girls that would trade places with you as that number 16th and under.
Oh, absolutely.
Just to be able to be at the level that you're at.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? It's, you know, that you have no idea who from the audience or who from your area looks up to you or just would love to be where you are, even though you don't think, you know, that you're where you should be.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much this was really honest, and I really, really appreciate you sharing your stories, because the whole point of this was, like, we wanted to inspire, and we wanted to say that, you know what, we're all there, and I thought your perspective, just being that someone at your level right now, and everybody really respects you in the industry, to say, you know what, here are my thoughts, and you're really honest and truthful, and we really, really appreciate it, and we're about out of time, but we want to definitely have you back, if you would come back and talk more.
Oh, yeah, we would love to have you back.
You're quite welcome, and it's amazing, you know, that I actually could talk this long, huh?
You did good,
man. No, but don't worry, Sandy. We had a quick question for you. Don't go.
It's amazing that you're actually going to be able to shut me up.
Sandy, before you go, for the 2009, we'll definitely see you at many of the shows, but what else do you have on your horizon, personally and professionally, though?
Right now I'm spending a lot more time with my family, both my, my sister's brothers, that part of my family from Pennsylvania, because everyone in my family still lives, very close to each other. I'm the only one that lives, a distance away. So I'm trying to balance that out. My mother-in-law is getting up there in age. She's over 90. So I spend a lot more time with her and my husband and stuff. And so it's just, and it's just kind of trying to, to balance out, my nursing and my, and the bodybuilding and my family.
Well, thank you so much, Sandy, for everything.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy. We appreciate your time and on such short notice.
Oh, no, you're very welcome, Colette. Very welcome, Chrissy.
Muscle Girls, Inc.
ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, author L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Hi, this is Debbie Lisewski, IFBB Pro. You're listening to Muscle Girls, Inc.
Our next guest won her pro card at the 2004 NPC Nationals as a middleweight. Before bodybuilding, she was actually considered clinically obese. She changed her life, and bodybuilding was a big part of how she transformed her physique. She's a personal trainer, volunteer firefighter, EMT, and apprentice stunt person. I am talking about none other than Emery Miller. Emery, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Emery.
Thank you very much.
Well, from your intro, and I'm sure people can gather, and our show is actually on different types of eating disorders, I understand that you were very overweight before you started bodybuilding. You want to talk a little bit about what your heaviest weight was? And give us your height, too, so people have a perspective, and what your contest weight is.
Sure. My weight fluctuated off and on for most of my life, so I don't know. I have an idea of what my heaviest weight was, but it could have been heavier when I was younger because I didn't weigh. So my heaviest before I started bodybuilding was 188 at 38% body fat, 5'1.5".
Wow, yeah.
And which is significantly obese. And I went down after the bodybuilding, when I started losing the weight, I went down to 111 and 6%. Which is what I went on stage at the first time. So 70 pounds of weight loss and 67 pounds of fat loss.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot.
But I was heavy off and on my whole life. Mm-hmm. Well, after puberty. Up until puberty, I was a total twig.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Emery, with your struggle with your overeating, what do you remember as like your darkest moment, and when you realized that, wow, I think I might need some help?
I have, there's a couple of, the darkest moment was when I realized I was fat, and then the next darkest moment was when I realized I wasn't going to get any help from my family. The first time I noticed that my body was, the first time I noticed my body at all was my best friend telling me that those marks on my hips were stretch marks, and what that meant was that I was fat, because I had no idea before that what I looked like. You know when you first start paying attention to what you look like? When you start liking boys and things like that.
Right.
That was when I noticed myself the first time, and I was already, my skin had already torn from gaining the weight. So the first image I had of myself was fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
How old were you?
The eating. Oh, I was 12.
Yeah, so that's 12? Young, okay. You know, to be feeling
I
like
went
that.
From being 85 pounds to 160 pounds in 1 year.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, do you think that was because of eating or just your body was going through changes and you just really, it just, what was happening?
My eating didn't change. My body did. And the sad thing is that my parents, people won't realize how much their kids learn how to eat from them.
Oh, absolutely.
From example. Because my parents never mentioned anything about food or restrictions with food or anything. They never once told me I couldn't have anything. And it wasn't until I hit puberty that my mom finally said, you better stop eating like that. And I had no idea what she was talking about because I wasn't eating any differently than I always had been allowed to.
When you say so, always been allowed to, like what was those foods that you were eating, like a typical day?
Well, I guess someone should have told me that a tiny little person should not be eating an entire box of sugar cereals for breakfast.
I say it's crack. I say cereal's like crack. I really do.
The whole box. I mean, like, the big box of Apple Jacks. Like,
mm-hmm.
The whole box. And I was 4'10" until I was 20.
Wow, yeah, so you're little. You just don't need that many calories. That's what people don't understand.
Right, exactly. So I would eat the whole box every morning for breakfast before I went to school, and it didn't matter until I hit puberty. Then I gained all sorts of weight, and, of course, then I had to unlearn all these behaviors that I didn't even realize were a behavior.
You have a supportive husband. How has this,
wonderful.
Has he in your life impacted your issues with food?
Well, when we met each other, we were at one of our thin stages. And when I say thin, I mean smaller clothing size. Obviously, my body fat was still an issue because I didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. I still didn't like myself when I looked in the mirror. And my clothing told me that I was okay because I was in a size 5'6". But I still wasn't happy, so I still felt fat. And I would have told you at the time that I was fat. And he was fairly thin. But after we got married, I thought it meant to be a good wife to make all these calorie-rich, lovely foods from scratch since I was raised by a professional pastry baker. And to me, that's what love was. And I almost killed us both doing that. So about 5 years in, we ended up being significantly and morbidly obese together.
And then you did you decide to lose it together too? As
well, yes, because when he came home, his doctor told him he was going to die if he didn't lose some weight.
Now, what was his heaviest?
302.
Wow.
302 at 43% body fat.
Yeah.
And how tall is he?
5'10".
Oh, that's significant.
Well, it sounds great on Ronnie.
Right, it sounds really good on Ronnie.
It sounds great when it's 43% body fat.
Well, Emery, this is a real, you know, fun question because I have to ask. You know, Dave said,
okay.
You know, Colette, I talked to Emery. You just got to ask her if it's true. Are you a nudist? I mean, and would you tell us a little bit about that lifestyle?
I was actually raised in a nudist camp for a few years when I was a child at 9. We lived in a nudist camp.
And what was that like?
And well, it was kind of weird when I was a kid because I'd never seen, you know, they were all old people there.
Right, right.
I didn't know that you got gray there too.
Right.
You know?
And for our listeners, I guess it does happen down there too then.
Right. So, it was kind of odd, but it ended up being just the norm for me. And it's funny because my grandparents, who I lived with most of the time, were very prudish. So I had to move in and out of this prudish environment to this completely free environment back and forth.
and it was really kind of strange knowing what was allowed when, right?
Yeah.
And then Patrick had never done it before, and we lived in the mountains back then, and I talked him into walking the dog with me in the bear, and he was such a nervous Nilly, you know, he kept carrying his coat and trying to hide every time he thought there was a noise, you know, we're in the middle of the woods at midnight.
So you basically,
he ended up liking it so much that I'm sorry?
Oh, so you openly practice, like you walk the dog in the nude and...
Right.
And Emery, are you naked now?
No, I just came home from work, they won't let me train my clients in the nude.
Me and Chrissy decided to get in the mode. Chrissy, I'm taking it off right now. What about you, Chrissy?
Just teasing. Oh, no, then you're going to keep bothering me. I won't be able to talk.
Let me get my bunny slippers because I usually have those on.
I love it. So basically...
But, you know, now we belong to a lot of the organizations, and we usually do the Beta Breakers walk through San Francisco. They have about 500 people that do it naked. We usually do it. So it's a lot of fun.
That's great. Do you think... Okay, we're going to switch tunes now. Do you think that competition, the act of competing... and that type of lifestyle can mask an eating disorder, like more like the obsessive compulsiveness of having to eat a certain way? I mean, what are your feelings on that?
I've heard a lot of people say that it can, and I've heard a lot of dissenters for the sport in that, but I honestly, having been there and having been 6 years without any relapse at all, I can tell you that I don't think you could pull it off, because the damage that you do to your physique after purging is so great. And anybody who's been involved in this sport knows that, you know, contest day, you eat a half a cup too much oatmeal and your whole body goes flat. You can see everything you do to yourself in that moment. You can see it externally, and that's what's so great about the sport, because before bodybuilding, I couldn't see the damage I was doing to myself, so I could ignore it. But now, if I make a mistake now, everyone's going to see it. So I can't misbehave. I have to do what I'm supposed to do, and only what I'm supposed to do, or it's going to show. Plus, an addiction, like any addiction, a food addiction, involves a lot of fibbing to people that you love. So if you're trying to tell your spouse that, no, Dave Palumbo told me to eat this whole loaf of bread right now.
Right.
If you care about your loved one and you know that they have this disorder, you're going to go check it out and see if that's really part of their diet. Patrick knows darn well that Dave would never tell me to eat that.
No, absolutely.
Right.
He better not be telling you that.
I know, because I haven't been able to do that, right?
Me neither.
Right. He told me to sit down with a loaf of sourdough and some butter.
Right.
you can't get away with it. If your family loves you and they're involved enough with what's going on with you, then they know what you can and cannot eat, and you really can't pull that off. Plus, it would show on stage. You'd be puffy.
Right.
Well, like you said, Emery, you know, when you're in contest shape, things are much more visible and apparent on you. So
right.
How do you personally feel about your body off-season versus in contest shape, and how does that affect your self-esteem?
I've come to terms with it. It bothered me the first year, because it felt like I did all of that work, and then it went away in like one day, you know, because you bloat, so you panic. And I certainly don't like that people who don't understand what you're doing come up to you and say, oh, you quit, because you sure got fat, because they will. And if you work in the gym setting, people who don't understand will come up and say things like that. But I've come to terms with it. I prefer shredded, but I've come to terms with it because I know I won't look good shredded if I don't do the work in the off season.
I always say it's the off season bodybuilder that makes a contest champion.
That's a good one. I like that.
Don't you like that one? I use that all the time, because
yes.
I find that all the time too. Is I train my hardest during the off season. But I'm not ripped, and people are like, "Oh, Colette, would you stop working out?" I'm like, "No. Did you just see me deadlifting 405? You know what I mean? I'm not doing that a week out from a competition.
Strength.
Yep.
Your body still needs to recover. It can't do all of that stuff. And then they'll ask me, oh, so when do you start training again? And I'm always training. It's just a different phase of the training.
Now, I once read that you are or I'm not sure if you're still doing this, a stunt person? I mean, do you still actively do that? What does that involve?
We haven't had much opportunity to do it lately. We were involved with a stunt crew out in Joshua Tree that they made film shorts. And what film shorts are is what they do. They film part of the script with non-famous actors to present it to the producers to talk them into buying the script so they can get the movie made. So we did a lot of things out there for that. We haven't been in contact with him much lately because as I got competing more and more, our lives got a little busier, but I would certainly love to keep doing it. We've each done several full body burns. We've both jumped off of buildings. We've both done the fight scenes. We actually have a couple of really great clips of us beating each other up, which is rather funny. And I really love being on fire. My fire chief didn't like it, but
oh my gosh.
How did you first get involved with all that?
There was a radio ad. I was still working at the law office, and there was a radio show on my going on, and they were announcing that they were looking for buff girls for a movie short. And I faxed them over my before and afters, and they had me come down, and they liked me, so I got to stay. And then Patrick ended up doing it too. So he's done stunt work all his life. He was involved in the Western stunt shows that were over here at this little Western stunt village when he was growing up. So he was already doing similar things. But I got to play a terrorist.
That's great.
I was the lead terrorist.
What's the crazy stunt? What's this crazy stunt you had to do? Jumping out of a building or being on fire?
Jumping off the buildings is more dangerous because if you don't land flat, you actually shove your collarbone or whatever hits first right through the rest of your body.
Great.
But I actually prefer being on fire. Being on fire is very much like scuba diving. That sense of peace and separation from everybody, like you're in your own little world.
Yeah.
Well, I also heard that you're a firefighter, and I heard the actual physical exam that you have to go through is actually quite grueling. Can you tell us about how that was when you actually took it yourself?
It is, and I had no intention of originally doing it. Patrick decided, after we lost all the weight and we were so fit, Patrick decided that he wanted to go try out for the fire department, and our local fire department was having a hiring day, so we just happened to be driving by on our way home, and they had the crew out there with people filling out applications, and they kept trying to talk me into filling it out too, and I kept saying no, I wasn't interested. And it took so long, I actually drove home, cooked dinner, come back to get Patrick, and they were still trying to talk me into it, so I eventually agreed, thinking I wasn't going to pass the physical test because we had just lost all the weight. So I was down around the 115 mark. I was pretty scrawny, and I think I was wearing a one or something like that back then. And I tried out, and I had a little trouble with the ladder, raising the ladder, because the upper body strength. But the chief, who I didn't know was the chief at the time, came over and started screaming at me because I was about to give up. And he was screaming, "Don't you quit! Don't you quit!" And I'm like, this strange guy's in my face. And it made me mad. And I pulled the ladder and made it.
Nice.
So apparently the men don't do real well on the step-up part. And the women don't do very well on the upper body strength part. But the only part I had a problem with was that ladder, and I never had a problem with it again after I learned the techniques. But we were actually with that fire department for 5 years up there. It's just when we moved down that the paid call doesn't exist down in the county we're in now.
Well, Emery, I mean, you don't look a day over 25, but if and it is true.
I'm old.
Do you see yourself competing? Like, it's just a two-pronged question. First off, did you ever think that the body that you had as growing up could be the body that you see on stage? And being that it is quite an amazing transformation, and we all know how I know how I feel about my body when it's in competition shape. And do you see yourself competing? And you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. What you mean, like a Betty Pariso and a Lisa Auckland?
Well, I'm going to be 45 this year.
Wow.
So I'm already doing the 40s part, but I certainly won't quit doing this until Patrick tells me that I don't look good enough to go on stage anymore. you know, if the skin gets to the point where it's hanging off my knees.
Right, right.
She'll tell me, honey, you need to quit now. But I don't see myself quitting at all because I like it too much.
Yeah, I know. You said you have this really crazy perseverance in life. I love it. There's nothing you can't do.
Stubborn.
Yeah, she does not give up.
It runs in my family.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that I would be like this because when I was... I think part of the problem with my weight issues growing up was because I wanted to look like Audrey Hepburn.
Right.
And there's no way that the short little person I am is going to look like a tall, skinny waif. So I was trying to fit into that mold instead of realizing that I really actually had terrific genetics for a different shape and that it was okay to be this different shape. So I certainly never expected to be this, but I wouldn't have it any other way now. Absolutely would not trade places with anybody.
Well, you know, a lot of women now are probably doing similar to what you did. You know, they're looking at actresses, they're flipping through magazines, seeing models, and, you know, they're having struggles with their weight trying to,
right.
you know, be what they're seeing on paper or on film. So what advice can
right.
you give them about, you know, how to not give up on themselves and how to be better themselves?
Yeah, and Michelle Obama has biceps, too.
Yes, she does.
You can't, no matter what shape you want to be in, you should always want to be a better you the next day. You give up when you can't, when you don't get fast enough results,
mm-hmm.
or when you're trying to be something that your shape is not going to be. It doesn't mean you can't be lean. It just means maybe you're not going to look like Giselle, but maybe there's a better shape out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
And as we age, we're not going to get any younger, and things aren't going to, you're not going to be able to avoid the aches and pains of aging, but if you stay in shape, it doesn't hurt as much because you're more capable. And then you start to love yourself, and it doesn't matter that you didn't hit that original first goal because you love yourself the way you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
you just can't give up. There is no alternative.
You know, Emery, did you ever use... You sound like you have this inner strength inside of you, but did you ever use like these Overeaters Anonymous or other types of programs to help you kind of overcome this? Or was this something that you kind of just did on your own, started the whole progression?
I went to some AA meetings with some people that were friends of mine, and I went with them to support them, but I found a lot of solace in what they had to say because I don't believe that addictions are different. I really don't. I don't believe that a drug addiction is different than a shopping addiction or different than an alcohol addiction. They all have a need you're trying to fill, and the recovery is the same. I didn't get any support from my family, and I'm very lucky that I'm so stubborn because I didn't go and seek help past seeking it from my mother. But when my mother refused to help me, it really pissed me off. And that's a good thing because it made me so stubborn about it that that's what made me quit doing to myself what I was doing. Because I figured if she didn't care enough about me to help me,
mm-hmm.
then I wasn't going to die for her, for lack of her helping me. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So I didn't
absolutely.
Seek out help other than mm-hmm. begging her to help me. And when I was denied, it just made me so mad that I put my foot down and said, no more. I'm not going to try to be what anybody else wants me to be anymore.
Well, as a personal trainer and competitor, I know I've tried many different diets. How many different diets have you tried for yourself?
And what's the craziest one?
Yeah, the crazy
countless. I mean, I've done the cabbage diet. Body for Life actually started out being pretty good, but the craziest ones I ever did when I was younger, when I first started in with the bulimia, I'd either eat one donut every day or I'd eat a quesadilla. That was my normal eating habits. So when I went on a diet, there wasn't very many places for me to go because there weren't much calories there. Of course, with the intermittent binges, but I did do a Jell-O diet, and I did a watermelon diet for a while there that was pretty stupid.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Jell-O, all 10 calories of it, you know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
As long as I could have all the Jell-O I want.
but nothing else.
Oh, right? My gosh. Now, our listeners, don't try that at home. Anyway.
No, that was ridiculous. Absolutely stupid. So messed up my metabolism.
You know, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask, you know, I know after we spoke yesterday that you did have some kind of hernia surgery. I wanted to explain this because it's kind of interesting how it kind of overlaps.
Well, I've had tons of hereditary female problems throughout my life, so I ended up having many, many surgeries through my navel over the years, and including a full hysterectomy in 2000, and they did it all laparoscopically through my navel. Unfortunately, my doctor, who is a sweet little guy, but he's been with me my whole life, didn't believe how much I lifted when I told him he needed to put a screen in there, and he didn't do that. So about 6 months after my hysterectomy, I ended up with a hernia. And I actually tore another part up in the epigastric area. We don't know how I did that. So my new surgeon went in and fixed everything on Monday, and I've got 7 little teeny tiny incisions that are about a quarter inch long. So I look like I got in a fight with someone with an ice pick right now.
Oh my gosh.
But I've got a ton of Kevlar and Gore-Tex in there, so it won't ever tear again. And back to working already. I just can't work out for the next month.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how when you tell doctors, I'm like, look, I lift a lot of weights. I don't just lift, you know,
right.
I don't lift. No, I lift a lot, like very heavy.
And they act like, isn't that cute?
Right, right.
No, I'm serious.
Exactly. They have no
right.
idea.
It took me a while to find a doctor who understood that I couldn't have a bunch of scarring either.
Right, I'm sure.
Well, Emery, you can lift for a month, and, you know, we wish you the best with your recovery. So when will we see you on stage this year?
I was hoping actually to do Tampa, but it just got taken away. I was hoping to do Tampa and the AC. It's a little late for me to get ready for the New York in time.
Okay.
But and the AC is not my best bet because I'm a lightweight. So
What a shame, Emery. Another one bites
the dust. Right. So I'm a little lost right now. I just found out about Tampa 2 days ago or yesterday or one of those 2 days. And I'm a little disappointed. So I'm trying to get my bearings down. Figure out what I'm going to do. I may just go ahead and do the AC anyway so I don't drop on my world ranking and then shoot for the New York next year, but I really wanted to compete this year because I've had such a terrific off season.
I know,
so I'm curious to see what it looks like.
We're all in the same boat. Let's just all do the Atlantic City. We'll have like 50 bodybuilders come. It'll be good though. It'll be good for it. We'll show a presence, you know what I mean? I think it's worth
it. There you go. That's perfect.
Well,
I love Atlantic City anyway. So,
well, Emery, we really, this was awesome. You were great, and we really appreciate you coming on. And I know our next interview, me and Chrissy are definitely not wearing any clothes, right or wrong, Chrissy?
Yeah,
you are absolutely
break out the bunny slippers.
Yep. Break out the bunny slippers, Chrissy.
That's right.
Well, Emery, thank you.
I still, you know, honestly, you too, I am still picturing the gray hairs down below from the elderly that are
Same with me, Chrissy. That's lingering with me right now. I agree with you.
I'm like, I get that thought out of my head. I'm 9 years old if I saw that.
Oh, my gosh.
Grandpa, no.
Right.
Not that. That's right, too.
Well, you know what, Emery, you're the best, and, you know, we will see you. Let's not say if. Let's say we'll see each other at the AC. Both you and I will be up on stage. We'll be amongst us. We'll be the smaller girls, but that's okay. We can still make a presence, you know?
Well, thank you for inviting me.
All right, tell Patrick
Emery,
we said hi.
Take care.
I will. Thank you very much for having me.
Muscle Girls, Inc.
ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, author L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. visit ALRIndustries.com today.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
This is IFBB fitness pro Julie Palmer, and you're listening to Muscle Girls Inc.
Well, Chrissy, I don't even know what to say. I think we've had some really inspiring, exciting, sad, emotional interviews these past few guests we've had on this past hour.
I know we have to thank all of our guests that came on our show, and we're very, very open and honest about their experience with their eating disorders and how they overcame it. So like you said, it's very empowering and inspirational to ourselves as well as to our listeners. So we can thank Crispy and Sandy Williamson and Emery Miller. And we also have on our podcast available Elise Firestone and Lee Penman. So we thank all these beautiful women. You know, you inspire us all.
You know, I want to just, after listening to everything that we've listened to and talked a little bit about everything in our prelogue to the show, you know, it's, you got to look at contest dieting as a whole. You know, I want to try and give every perspective I can when you're looking at the sport and how it relates to eating disorders. Certainly when you're on a contest diet, it can affect the pituitary, it can affect the hypothalamus, and it can affect the thyroid negatively. You know, you're on a restrictive diet, you're eating less calories, you're void of calcium sometimes, vitamins and minerals. And now let's toss in there, not that everybody is doing that, but those that are, androgens, T3, which is a thyroid hormone, stimulants, and anti-estrogens. We're dealing with unexplained and unexplored territory. So we've now coupled on just the natural issues dealing with after a show and deprivation, and now all these other just symptomatic situations with other things that you might be doing. For what it's worth, some people say, there's no looking back. They don't care. They'll do whatever they have to do to look a certain way on stage or look a certain way just to walk around or what have it be. But it's when it leads to the frustration and the depression and the self-esteem that happens after a show where they're chasing that contest condition. That's what concerns me. And that's what I feel can lead to another type of disordered eating, a type of disordered eating that's repackaged. So certainly you might have overcome eating like an anorexic or what have you, but then you've just repackaged it and you've lost the one thing that we're all searching in life, and that's balance. It's gone. Okay, so then I mean it sounds very negative, but I want to look at then again yet the other side of the spectrum. For those that have suffered from anorexia, the idea of building muscle and training, they can help them overcome their fear of food. All right, however, when with repackaging the eating disorder, you can then face the other flip side of the coin where, okay, now you've become in contest shape and now you've deprived yourself, and then you feel, all right, I'm going to start eating everything in sight, and you start, you might create a binge eating disorder. But what we have to remember is that women are supposed to carry 10 to 12% essential fat. That is how we're supposed to be. So when we're competing, we have to push ourselves to a level that's unnatural. And so we need to learn to love our bodies both ripped and soft. And it really comes down to body image and feeling in balance and loving yourself, thin, a little overweight, 10 pounds overweight, or what have you. And if you love your body, then you're going to want to feed your body good. And you know that binging isn't healthy for your body. You know that overeating isn't healthy for your body. You know that undereating isn't helping the body. You learn that you got to love your body and you want to feed it good foods. On another note, so we're looking at the whole spectrum. We've seen the positive and we've seen the negative in our sport. But in defense of bodybuilding, figure, and fitness, and bikini competition, this sport is like no other. There's it's the same in every sport. So whether it be gymnastics, ice skating, and dance, where you're put in that element where diet and training becomes an issue because it's how you look, or if it's football, baseball, or hockey, you beat your body up to be the best you can be for your sport, whether it be on the field, the ice, the dance floor, what have you. It's the nature of the game, however that game is played. So some will endure an injury, bandaged up, they'll be banged up beyond repair, or they might walk away injury-free. It's sometimes the chances that we have to take for the sport that we love. Beat that one, Chrissy. Mm-hmm. Come back with a better...
I don't know if I can. I don't like the pressure.
The pressure is on.
I don't want pressure.
Your final thoughts by Chrissy Chin.
Well, Colette, you know, honestly, I think it all comes down to the fact that, you know, it's about being healthy, you know, and about loving yourself, you know, inside and out. And finding, like you said, that balance, you know, that balance in life. You can't have one thing, you know, take control of everything in your life. You need to have a healthy balance, just like Sandy Williamson told our guest, you know, how she balances being a nurse and, you know, judging, you know, as many shows as she does a year and her family time. So it's about a healthy balance. And, you know, you have to do it for yourself. You need to be happy for your, you know, with yourself in order to make others happy, too. And, you know, another good point that one of our guests mentioned, you know, you can't make everyone happy. You can't please everyone, you know, but being happy yourself, I think, is most important. And we all can't be perfect, even though, you know, we strive to be a perfectionist at times. I know myself, I catch myself often trying to do that. You know, but sometimes, you know, loving your flaws can actually give you more character. Like, even look at, think about Madonna and a gap in her tooth, or maybe, you know, the mole on Cindy Crawford, you know, some may consider those flaws, yet, you know, that has given them, you know, a certain character about them, you know, and they're known for that. And it's also important to note, you know, eating disorders are very debilitating. You know, we went over a lot of, you know, health complications that could come about, you know, with your heart, with your thyroid, with your pancreas, you know, and ulcers and many other things that can develop, you know. But it's important to know is you realize them and take control over them, that, you know, they can be overcome. And our guests showed that, you know, they've all overcome some type of eating disorder and they're very successful. And, you know, whether it's with their education or with their careers or, you know, on the pro stage. So, you know, that just shows you that it can be beat and it can be overcome. So it's definitely inspiring to hear stories like that. And further on that note, I know that we're going to provide a list of contacts and websites on our forum on rxmuscle.com for those interested in more information on all these eating disorders and maybe some possibly others that we have not mentioned. So we'll be putting up a bunch of information of this as well as some informational links in regards to eating disorders. And we'll also be posting other stories from maybe other athletes and competitors. So if you would like to share a story with us, you know, please email Colette or I directly or PM us on rxmuscle.com. And we'd love to share your stories. And we must also thank, you know, Elise Firestone, who we just had on, and Lee Penman for sharing their touching stories and their battles with their eating disorders. And their stories are available on podcasts, available on rxmuscle.com. So, yeah, we had a wonderful show and definitely inspired and touched after hearing all our guests today.
You know, I really hope that we did one thing, and I hope we inspired and we provoked talk and we provoked change in those that might be suffering from an eating disorder. And on that note, I would like to thank our guests, Sandy Williamson, Chrissy Hawkins, Emery Miller, for stopping by. And until next week, remember, Muscle Girls, Inc., it's not just a radio show.
It is who we are.
Muscle Girls, Inc. is an RxMuscle.com presentation. Listen to Colette Nelson and Chrissy Chin every week at the same time. Be sure to download this and all of our radio shows at our website, RxMuscle.com. This has been Muscle Girls, Inc.